Welcome to Talking Travel on to When You Are FM. Greg Richard still in here and with Sally Lucas. Sally, how are you?
Hi, Greg. I'm fine. How are you?
Never been brighter. Never been brighter for a Friday
that
afternoon.
That wasn't what you told me earlier. Well, you're fibbing.
Well, I'm very bright with it now. But today we're looking at sort of European towns that not many people would get to.
Yeah, some of the prettiest towns in Europe. And also I'll talk about a new cruise doing the sub-Antarctic islands of New Zealand.
Today we're going to Europe to start off with, but having a look at some, well, I guess you said nice towns, but not that many people know of.
Well, they might know some of them. I'm not assuming that, you know, that people don't know about some of these smaller towns. They might know more than I do. Who knows? But these are considered 20, or I won't go through the whole 20, but I'll just say some of Europe's prettiest towns. And sometimes, like, if you've already been to your capital cities and all the main areas, it's nice to get off the beaten track and go in somewhere that's not so touristy, not so populated with hordes of tourists. And so these are just some of those villages that fit into that category, or I think they do anyway. One of them is Annecy in France, and it's a really beautiful little town, lakeside town in the southeast of France, and it's often compared to Venice. It's called the Venice of the Alps because it's got a network of canals, and all around it, it's lined with these beautiful pastel painted houses, so which is just delightful. And they've got a beautiful building, a 14th century building in the middle of the canal called the Palais de Lille, and it's in the middle of this canal called the Canal du Tue, which once served as a prison and also as a lover's bridge. But this little river, the Tue, which is only a few kilometres long and is a tributary of the Rhone, is considered the cleanest river in Europe.
That's a big call.
Isn't it? A really big call. Going to the top of the...
Probably that'd be the Thames, wouldn't it?
Well, they're trying to get the Seine, aren't they? They wanted to be clean for... Well, the Olympics is nearly on us. Let's hope they've got it clean. Anyway, going further north now into Sweden, on the island of Gotland, because Sweden has got many islands, there's a little town called Visby. And you can either fly there from Stockholm or you can get a three-hour ferry from the mainland. And it's got well-preserved medieval ruins in this town, which has earned it the UNESCO World Heritage status. So that's another little one you might want to visit in summer, particularly make most of the Baltic Sea. It's got lovely beaches and so on. I mean, I wouldn't go there. To me, an island destination is not so much a winter place when you're going that far north. It'd be lovely to do in summer and get away from the crowds as well.
Might be a bit breezy this too in the winter.
a little bit breezy, gosh. Having been in Norway, well, it was really not even the middle of winter and we were snowing and in layers upon layers. So, yes, can get down to, I think, up the top there, around about minus 27. So, yeah, a bit chilly.
Let's bring a jumper.
Or three. Yeah. Albania, which has got some beautiful beaches and coastline. People forget about Albania, but it's all in that same area, that Croatian, that Greece area. It's got delightful areas there. But right in the middle of Albania is a little town called Berat. And it's all a hillside village, which again is UNESCO World Heritage, and it's called the Town of 1,000 Windows, and it's got all these wonderful houses built into the top of the hill with a mountaintop castle, ancient city walls, winding cobblestone streets, and it's just absolutely stunning. It's quite a beautiful village. Cutting across to Ireland now, a place called Cove, but it's spelt COBH. And it's in Southern Ireland. It's a southern seaside village, southeast of Cork by about 30 minutes. It's got this huge, dramatic Gothic cathedral there, and it's where millions of the Irish departed for America and Australia and elsewhere in the 19th and 20th centuries. So if you've got Irish ancestors, it's likely they may have come from there once upon a time. And eerily enough, it was the last stop for the Titanic before its ill-fated transatlantic voyage going across towards New York. So it's just so many of these lovely little places, Greg. San Pantaleo in Sardinia is another one. It's one of the stunning Mediterranean islands of Sardinia. And it's in the north of the island. It's a village of vine and flower-covered stone buildings with terracotta roofs with dramatic mountain backdrop behind it. There's ruins of a 10th century church there. And we forget, I guess, how old the European continent is compared to us. You know, we talk 10th century, we think something 2 centuries old is ancient here. You know, but it's just amazing when you go to some of these places where you come across these ruins that are just absolutely astounding. It's been worshipped, people have worshipped there since the 5th century. You know, my mind boggles when I say these things sometimes. It's just really amazing. But yeah, another couple of lovely little places to say in north and central Sardinia. And lots more. So
looking at some European towns.
Yeah, picking a few more out. There's this lovely island called Kefalonia, which is sort of northwest, if you like, of Athens. Mm-hmm. And I've been by there, only had a day there on the way to Ithaca, which is one of my favourite islands because that's where we had our honeymoon.
Oh, nice.
And there's no airport on Ithaca, which is a delightful island in its own right. And so you don't get hordes of tourists. It's mainly people who come in on yachts. Like it's sailor's sort of paradise, and you get lovely marinas.
As soon as you said yachts, I just thought rich people are turning up there. That doesn't sound overly nice if there's heaps of rich people there.
There's not heaps of rich people there. They live a very basic lifestyle, the people on Ithaca, actually. But not all of the Newcastle or the Novocastrians who here from Greece came from there, but a great percentage of them do.
Oh, right, yeah.
Which is why I went there. We actually stayed in this old stone house that belonged to one of the girls that used to work for me in one of my previous jobs. And it was her old family home that still had the well and everything there. It was just a step back in time. But this is a little town actually on the island of Kefalonia, which you've got to go via to get sometimes to Ithaca, and it's called Assos. And Kefalonia is a gorgeous island. It's a lot bigger, but it's still not in that real touristy group of islands, which are more to the south, down around the Cycladic Islands or in those areas where you do get more tourists coming, you know, to Rhodes and Crete and, you know, Mykonos, all the Ossas, Delos, etc., Paros. But it's really beautiful and it's right on the ocean, this lovely little town, and lovely houses that just cluster on the hillside, and you've got this crystal clear water. There's a 15th century Venetian castle there and seawall, and it's just absolutely stunning. So again, you're getting away from the crowds, and I just think anywhere you can do that and watch the world go by, but you're still in a delightful setting.
You can have a bit more of an explore around as well. And
genuine food, because often you find a lot of the food to me gets hyped up in tourist destinations that's not as traditional as it could be. Whereas you go to these little small towns, you're going to have exactly what they've been cooking and eating for centuries.
Or they've got the generic fast food brand.
They won't have McDonald's, that's for sure. Or Kentucky Fried. And another one, this little town, it's in France. It's got a lovely name, it's Saint-Cirq-la-Popie. I think that's so cute. What a cute name. And it dates back to medieval France, and it's a real fairy tale little village. It's nestled in the mountains 90 metres above the Lot River, and I've stayed just on the Lot River in another town which was considered one of the prettiest villages of France. And it's about 2 hours north of Toulouse, so it's quite near a main city, but you're still only 2 hours away, and you're in this town that you could be in the middle of nowhere. And many of the stone and wood buildings there, including the church, date back to the 13th and 16th century. But it's a lot of these cities back then, or towns as they call them, were always on a hill so they could see the enemy coming, and they're all surrounded by stone walls, so you're in this enclosed, you know, stoned city. Which we stayed in Uzès, which is another one down near the not on the Lot River, that was near Avignon, which again you're not in Avignon, which is busy, but Uzès was perched up on this hill with the walls all around it, and you had these wonderful plazas where everyone just comes out when the sun goes down. There's lovely trees. You sit there with your glass of wine or your aperitif or whatever, discuss what you've done for the day, watch the world go by. And then they usually have beautiful market scenes, little plazas, you know, of a weekend as well. So you're getting genuine markets in all these little villages. So it's a delightful way to wander your way around Europe, whether you're driving a car or hopping on a train or something, just to pop into some of these more unique, original little villages. I mean, I think once you've been to the big cities, I guess you can go back. There's always something you'll be able to see because cities are huge compared to us. Like, you know, Paris with 18 arrondissements, I'm sure you could spend a week in each if you really wanted to. But I think to get away out of those areas into your smaller villages is where you really experience the true way of life.
The true culture there
and what
people are like and what's happening.
So, look, there's lots more of them, but we might continue with some of them another time, Greg.
Righty-o.
I'd like just to mention this sub-Antarctic voyage. Now, this is just a one-off that Aurora Expeditions is doing for the moment anyway. It's January 2026, so we're talking a fair way out. It's on their new expedition ship called the Douglas Mawson, which is an appropriate name for an expedition vessel. But again, these sub-Antarctic islands in New Zealand are all UNESCO World Heritage as well. And it's quite a rugged region of our Antipodes region. And it's got a lot of endemic bird life in these areas, about 15 species of birds that you won't find anywhere else in the world. So you're going to somewhere that's very pristine. There's no one lives there. You know, it's like going, I guess, to the Galapagos in a sense, even though there are limited people that live there. Like the animals aren't afraid of humans because they've never been hunted, never been preyed upon. Mm-hmm. So you're going to see lots of things like that. You'll see an iconic brown kiwi, which is called the Southern Tokoeka. And I'm sorry, Maoris, if I've pronounced incorrectly, the friendly, flightless weka bird. And then you have these wonderful crimson blossoms of the rata, which is affectionately known as the southern Christmas tree, which is beautiful. And you're doing zodiac cruises along, you know, craggy coastlines, breeding grounds for these rare snare-crested penguin, Buller's albatross. And also you go into Auckland Islands as well as part of this once you've done the subantarctic. So it's a very interesting itinerary if you really love wildlife and you're really wanting to go into a new frontier. Again, we're always trying to talk about something different you can do, the adventurers out there that love to do something different in life and just step away from the usual and be on a beautiful expedition vessel at the same time. So I think that would be remarkable.
Sounds especially like birds as well by the sound of it.
Yeah, so. Well, I love birds. I became an absolute aficionado more of birds after I went to East Africa. I went there for the wildebeest, for the migration, for the animals. But I came back appreciating the most incredible bird life that continent has and how colourful they were. And I thought, wow, I had no idea. I went there for the animals, but came home a fan of you know, the wonderful avian variety instead and just love birds. It's fascinating to watch.
And now you come back to minor birds that annoy everybody around here.
Well, the Indian miners do. The other little ones aren't too bad, the noisy miners, but you don't want those. I don't get the Indian miners at home, thank God. I do get the noisy ones, but I don't get the Indian ones.
No, I'm not big fans of them. Not big fans at all.
Oh, the miners. They're not majors in your case.
Exactly right. Got a couple of hot deals there for us.
Certainly have. A few cruisy ones to start with Viking. They've got a lovely cruise of the Douro River in Portugal, which it's got a 900-year history of growing their vineyards and lovely monasteries. It's a gorgeous river cruise to do, actually. And that includes a two-night stay in a hotel in Lisbon as well as your eight-day trip. Savings now of up to $2,000 per couple, while still available, obviously, like all things. It expires on the 31st of May. If you're wanting to do a land-based tour, there's a lovely tour that Insight has of Switzerland for the rest of this year, where, again, on certain departures, you can save up to $4,000 per couple if you book by the end of May. And Antarctica is always a draw card, I think, for everybody. Aurora Expeditions have Antarctica 2025-26 launch of their new brochure. And if you book by 30 June, again, it's first in, best dressed. You can get early bird savings of up to 25% off. And with their Arctic for the rest of this year, a lot of their Arctic voyages, they're offering no single supplements on a select range of their 2024 Arctic voyages. Now, getting back to land-based sales, the Best of Asia with APT. This sale ends also 31 May, and there's heaps of savings right across the board, whether it's Cambodia, Vietnam, etc., South Korea, Japan, also India, Sri Lanka. The savings vary, Greg. It could be anything up to $8,000 a couple on some of the longer tours, and, you know, maybe as little as probably $2,800 a couple on some of the shorter tours, but they're still really good savings.
Still pretty good, yeah. I'll take $50 to go as the moment as the savings.
Yes.
Any discount.
Any discount's better than no discount, isn't it? And I just thought I'd mention again, like we were talking again today with some of the things that doing something a little bit different or off the beaten track. So Viking have got a range of itineraries too. If you're looking again for just, you know, getting away from the river cruises in Europe or whatever, they've got one out of Buenos Aires that goes down to Ushuaia, then down into Antarctica, which is available. And also they do that one with the South Georgia Island, a lot of the other islands in Antarctica. Some of these are a bit longer, like they go up to 19 days in those areas. You're really into that Antarctic, South Georgia, Falkland Islands area. All these I'm mentioning, although those have got up to savings up to $2,000 a couple. And then they've got this incredible one. It's 87 days and 12 countries. Panama, scenic South America, travelling all the way from the Arctic to Antarctica. Like, if you've got the time and the money.
Yep.
And then that one, you can save up to $4,000 per couple, plus get free business class airfare. Another interesting one they're doing is the Northwest Passage, which not a lot of people have done, which, of course, is all around Greenland and going across that Arctic Circle towards Canada. So they've got savings on that. It's a 13-day with $2,000 per couple, the Canada and the Northwest. And they also do one of Niagara and the Great Lakes. So you're actually doing all the lakes rather than ocean voyages. So you're cruising that whole lake system around Niagara Falls into Lake Erie, into Lake Huron, Lake Michigan, etc. So that, again, is something very different.
You don't want to go off, though, you know, the falls, though.
That'd be really nice, though. And if anyone who doesn't, well, doesn't like travel, sea travel, should I say, because of the seasickness attitude. Yep. You're only on lakes. This is where lakes and rivers are good for people to experience cruising if, you know, they're worried about doing a long ocean voyage and worrying about that, because some people do have a potency to suffer, you know, from the upper ear, the inner ear problem. So it's not just seasickness. It's probably they'd get car sick or any sort of motion sickness. So some people, unfortunately, are susceptible to that. So
the river ones would just be a bit more smoother.
Well, they are. They're as smooth as you can imagine, really. For someone who's really worried, it's a lovely way for them to still be able to do some sort of a lovely boat holiday without suffering from the sickness that goes with it. And lastly but not leastly, we've got wonderful Christmas markets, river cruises available that have still got some incredible discounts of up to $2,000 per person. There's about four or five cruises that are doing all the market regions in Europe. Lovely, you know, luxurious, obviously, ship as you're cruising along these wonderful rivers within Germany and France and Austria, etc. And also there's early bird discounts available on river cruises up till about the 30th of June now, available for 2025. So they're starting now to offer you all these early bird discounts looking ahead, as well as some lovely savings for the end of this year if you want to do a Christmas cruise. Just to get away from the hustle and bustle of, you know, the lead up to Christmas. Yep. You know what it's like? How nice would it be just to be, you know, sitting there watching the world go by, or wandering around some markets and sipping on some mulled wine, or having a roasted chestnut, or, you know, just really enjoying life.
I don't think I've ever had a roasted chestnut.
They're nice, you know.
I'm sure they are. Anything
they're great. Huge nuts to open, though. We stayed in a place out south in Brighton, Victoria, and we were surrounded by a chestnut forest. And there were all these chestnuts were just falling on the ground. I can't think must have been the time of the year when they obviously harvest them. And I have an English friend that was working with us, and I brought them home for her because I know she was missing chestnuts because they have them in Europe. We don't often have them here. But obviously we can grow them down south because they need that cold climate. Oh, my God. It's got this huge... It looks like a piece of wood, like this huge kernel or whatever you call around it. Like you need a jackhammer
to break into it.
Get the nut out. There must be an easier way, but I'm not sure what it is. But anyway, yes, chestnuts are lovely.
Righto. Sally Lucas, thank you very much.
Thanks, Greg.
And we'll catch you again next Friday, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, another week. Slowly goes by or quickly goes by.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.